Hello and welcome to a brand new kind of Arsenal podcast brought to you proudly by the Highbury Squad in conjunction with the Gooners podcast. It's a respite from the wins and losses, a break from tactics and talking points, just some good old-fashioned fun, chats and banter with some of the most recognizable faces within our great Arsenal family, telling their stories, sharing their views, and answering your questions. Join us now live as we travel from Highbury to the Grove. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is the first in a new maiden concept from Highbury to the Grove. When I was putting together this podcast, it was very, very important for me to get it kicked off the right way. And we've been planning this for months. But when I figured out that I was going to be here when we went and started this thing, there was never going to be anyone else I wanted to have as the first guest. So welcome to the podcast, someone that I've been very fortunate enough to have on before to meet, and just, she is Highbury. So welcome to the podcast, Amy Lawrence.
God, that feels nice. Thank you very much. Very glad to be here, as always. Spiritual home.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll definitely talk about the place behind me. But if for some reason you've been living under a rock for the last 60 years, I'm sorry, not 60 years. I just meant Arsenal history. I didn't mean, ooh, oh boy. No. See? All right, let's start this new podcast all over again. You will find Amy.
You're not far away, sadly.
Jesus. No, I'm not. And I meant for my lifespan. I didn't mean hers. You will know Amy from reading multiple books, journalistic works with multiple outlets, most recently The Athletic, from listening to in podcasts, of course. Currently, you can hear her on Handbreak Off on The Athletic, watching her in interviews on stage with various Arsenal legends, of course, movies like The Masterpiece, 1989, and of course, definitely the source and the person who just, again, like I said, screams Highbury in 1989, which is something we share in common, then you will know Amy Lawrence. So we'll definitely talk about the place behind us. And I apologize. It was so important for me to get the background of the north of Highbury behind us that there's, you know, you can see us in the background. So since the sun has gone down, we've got a little bit more of a, of a reflection. But the goal of this show, look, there are some great podcasts out there that talk about tactics. You've just watched one if you were watching the Highbury Squad talking about yesterday's game against Brentford and Saturday's game against Brentford. This is going to be a little bit different. We want to bring our viewers closer to some of the amazing people like Amy and like the others that we're going to have on and provide you to get some of your questions answered. And in fact, because they're questions of guests, we're going to call them questions. I think we can do that. So we want you to put your questions into the chat, and we will save them and answer them at the end of the show. Spend a bit, maybe 10 or 15 minutes doing that. So just put something in the chat starting with G. We'll know it's a question, and we'll ask it at the end. So I have a question for you. Have you looked at the league table lately?
Funnily enough, it has not escaped my attention.
Because I have been too nervous to check recently. can you tell me who's on top? Because I'm not so sure.
Do you know what? It's a funny one, but I almost feel like everything leading up to this weekend felt like a kind of part one of this season. And suddenly we've gone into a new dimension. And being where Arsenal are and who they're close to and with what lies ahead, it honestly feels like almost, I don't know, we've gone some quantum leap into a different place, a much scarier place, a much more potentially exciting place. But yeah, there's a gear change, let's be honest. There's a gear change that was really crystallised by events this weekend involving all three teams at the top. And I think you come away from the weekend thinking there's three very serious, very impressive beasts.
Doesn't feel like we're kind of out of our depth anymore. Like last year, we were like careening down a roller coaster at breakneck speed.
Exactly. And then everybody was just clinging on for dear life. And, you know, it was the first time on the roller coaster. It was, you know, you're on the ride for the first time. You don't know what's coming around the corner. This time it feels slightly different because I think there's a little bit more know-how. But I still feel, if I was being deeply honest, like, obviously you've got to take every point you can at the moment, but I would kind of love to be just tucked in behind. Really? It feels a bit early.
You like drafting a little bit behind like they do on the Tour de France?
Yeah. You want to feel like you've got a little bit more in the tank. And, you know, the people in front are right in your sights, but there's such a intensity about leading the pack. And it's a hard thing to do without a lot of experience.
And having to think about it for the next 3.5 weeks, it feels like.
It's great, but it's scary, is my kind of mindset.
Yeah, well, I think we're all buckled in for a roller coaster ride for the rest of the season. And you know, I'd rather be on the roller coaster than not be on the roller coaster. Let's put it that way. And we've been standing on the side, you know, with that you must be too tall. Not, you know, we weren't tall enough to ride this ride. And now we are, and so let's enjoy.
I had a really funny little moment after the game against Brentford. You know, when you come out of the concourse and the team's gone off and giving them the reception and everybody's, you know, feeling so much energy, and there's that kind of like flow of people. It's almost like different currents flowing against each other in a really busy sort of body of water of people going in all different directions as they're leaving the stadium. And I love that bit in the concourse. Everyone's buzzing and chatting and singing. And
it's funny, I came to look for you at halftime yesterday, and I guess maybe you had gotten up earlier. I came down the wrong one, but it was literally just as that goal went in against us. I left a few minutes early, came down to see if you were around, and poked my head in just in time to see people gasping and a couple people on press row cheering, which wasn't very nice of them. I didn't think they let those kinds of folks in there. But
sometimes, but no, I wasn't working. I was in the North Bank.
That's one reason I couldn't find you. Oh.
And so we're in the concourse, buzzing around, and I bumped into someone from way back. You know, we used to go years and years ago to matches. Big bear hug stuff, you know. And he said, you've been talking to my mate and we've just been saying, like, would you rather win 6-0 or would you rather win 2-1 with a late goal? And all that kind of sort of drama, theatre feelings. And it was brilliant because, I knew exactly what he was saying. And then I was with my eldest, who's 16, and he, you know, had that completely different mindset. He was like, well, 6-0, obviously, for goal difference. You know,
you raised such a practical young man.
Well, I mean, yeah. I'm not sure that's the word we normally use, but I just, you know, I think data and analysis and all that is such a part of how we consume football nowadays. And yet, for me, what I love most is feelings. And but it was an interesting kind of part of the thought process of how you feel about what's going on. And I think the point about this Arsenal team right now is we've got to have different ways to do the job.
I was just thinking, I mean, we're winning in different ways. I mean, the 6-0s are great. I mean, I'll take them all the time, but you know, you need to be able to peel away against a team that's clearly come here just to.
I don't remember any champion almost ever that's done it all as a procession. There's always some hairy moments, and it's about being able to get through them as well. So that was really a fascinating part of that.
Now, you did not you weren't born into an Arsenal family. So
really.
I think
well, kind of
the different London club maybe that you were exposed to earlier.
I mean, not really, in the sense that going back to the 70s when I was arrived on this planet, you know, I was walking around the Emirates the other day and I noticed that those flags, the sort of decorative flags with players that they got up,
right,
had women players on it. It's the first time I noticed it, as well as the men players. I thought, oh, that's new, you know, that's different. And I come from an era, kids, where girls just weren't expected to be in any way a part of football. As a fan, as someone who played, like almost in any avenue whatsoever. So kind of, I didn't have that much, you know, my early exposure to football was really limited because I wasn't kind of given it.
Yeah.
And my dad and my brother in our household were QPR, were our QPR fans, but it didn't have a major.
They haven't switched over even me. For you.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's true. You don't do that. You don't switch your football.
No, quite right too. But the first game that I ever went to, because they never really thought to take me, was right here behind us at Highbury. And my best friend, her dad had 3 season tickets and thought it was time to take my daughter, and I better bring a friend along because in case she doesn't like it, you know, or they get bored or whatever. So, and it was literally like that scene in Fever Pitch. I'll always remember my dying day. That moment where you kind of almost go from the darkness into the light when you come through the doorway and the, you know.
I wasn't going to do this, but
it all opens up.
I'm a person who has to have some notes in front of them. Read this.
When you watch Fever Pitch for the first time, the scene where a young Paul, a.k.a. Nick Corby, is dragged along to Highbury by his dad, only to have his life change in the moment he set eyes on the pitch. How close was that to your experience? Yeah, I mean,
it's great that
it was weird because when... First of all, when I read it, and then particularly when I saw it, when it was made into a movie, it was like who's watching my life stuff. Yeah, very, very resonant. But yeah.
We used to show our kid that movie. I mean, yeah. it sickened me that when I tried to find Fever Pitch online, it was some baseball movie. But we finally found the right one. And you know, back when we had the DVD player in the car, so that the kids wouldn't cry the whole time. That was one of the first movies we played.
But look, I feel like in life, in whatever you do, whatever your passions are, you know, there is sliding doors moments. There is luck moments about the whole thing. And, you know, I always think, who knows if you, Magic Mike, had a hidden talent that you'd never come across. You could be the most sensational canoeist or... I don't know.
Up until recently, that would have been a very unlucky canoe, I have to say.
Maybe he would have been an incredible painter or, I don't know, a kind of, I mean, who knows? There's like hundreds and thousands of things out there that we could all do. And you just never know. I mean,
no,
I sometimes look at things like the Olympics and you think, how did you figure out that you were, you know, into the luge, you know, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, the luge is not something that you're born in.
It's not an everyday kind of occurrence that you get exposed to something like that, and it's like, oh,
well, I guess if you're born talented. in like Ostersunds or whatever, or yeah, Bodo maybe. Or wherever
those places are. But you catch my drift.
No, sliding doors moments.
Even the things that you know, people you meet, the things that you know you connect to in life, that can be, you know, something that's with you in a hugely impactful way. And we're lucky enough, all of us in this Arsenal family, that whatever it is, something made us choose it or it choose us. And we're on this particular ride rather than a different one. It might not be Arsenal, it might not be football, it might not be sport. But thank goodness, yeah. I think most of us would agree.
I couldn't agree more about the sliding door moment.
We're right here.
I mean, we were set to be moved to Cambridge for our 2 years. And you know, when I ended up coming over here in the 80s, and at the very, very last minute, it ended up being London. So I could have had a Cambridge United podcast 45 years later. But no, it ended up being London.
That could be.
Well, you know, I would, that would be a miserable life, I think. But
no.
So the era in which you fully began embracing the club, coming all the time with friends, not necessarily the brightest period in our club, with kind of the mid-80s time frame, I guess.
Yeah.
Terry Neal, Don Howe, the massive Steve Burtenshaw era. But then seemingly out of nowhere, from Millwall, former Arsenal player George Graham comes into play.
Gorgeous George.
George. Not the first time, nor the last time I've seen you together, actually. But how did you recall how you felt kind of at his appointment? And then obviously, you know, we know how those first couple of years went and what happened with the team.
Look,
but
I think.
Did you see coming what ended up coming?
Nobody would say that. But I think if you are a 12 to 14 year old or whatever, like when Mikel started, got appointed, say, for example, and you've gone through latter era Wenger in your childhood, and then the kind of slightly confused, you know, Emery experiment, like,
good way of putting it.
You know, did you envisage this? Remember when just look back at those early team sheets of, somebody said the other day, I can't remember when it was, but not that long ago, it was like, this was the back four for whichever game it was. And it was,
Mustafi and, yeah, I mean, I don't want to.
Yeah, you don't name names, but it, you know, it wasn't.
That's a name.
It wasn't Saliba and Gabriel, yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about who it was, and more than who it was, because that brings back bad memories. But
I think what was so exciting about the late 80s when George came in, George changed things overnight. And it's funny because there's a, you know, the whole thing at the moment with Mikel and the fogging is standard,
yes,
you know, which is such a great catchphrase. George Graham, I always thought George Graham's favourite word in a very different accent, Glaswegian, yeah, standards.
Standards.
Standards. And he walked in that door and he had standards. And he looked around and he wanted standards. And it was quite similar in, you know, to obviously the people when Mikel came who weren't really willing to play ball in the same way in terms of those Foggen, yeah, standards. Of behavior and mentality and devoting yourself and demanding of yourself that you give everything to what's going on here. George was the same. And he absolutely went in and the, you know, some equivalence of waving goodbye to Aubameyang and Ozil.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, various people who had, you know, who had big names and big characters and big history behind them. He didn't take long to work out that this was not who he wanted to work with. He wanted people he could influence, he could mold, he could feel their hunger, he could encourage, he could build. And that's what he did. And what Mikel has done has a similar energy. And as a kid, watching that happen in front of your eyes and watching a team grow from being, you know, up and down and a bit of, you know, some good times but some absolute rubbish, to into this kind of very credible, very something that you just love and you die for in your emotionally, that you're so connected with as a fan, you believe in so much, you want them to do well so much, you feel like you're on the journey with them. That was George
and
that team,
and to get the support
and for Mikel to do that now in, you know,
with player power, that wasn't the case.
Exactly.
We didn't have Lee Dixon, you know,
yeah, you're dealing with
doing his contract in the car,
yeah, who were on
500 quid.
Exactly. I mean, you know, not even having agents necessarily, you know, and you're going from that to this huge industry with these conglomerates and, you know, billions all over the place. And I admire immensely that somehow Mikel Arteta has been able to effect in such a very believable way in an environment that makes it super hard to do so.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the you talk about standards or Foggenes standards, they are the ones that should have the standards. The social media commentators and, you know, and radio callers and that sort of thing, their standards are not relevant to the situation. That's where I keep hearing the word standards when it comes to what fans expect and what they demand. Really? And what they, yeah, it's
why? You what want, you want people think that you can do that from the outside.
Exactly. I say you have no control over the situation. No. So your standards are irrelevant. I know what you want. But now you just sound, you know, anyway, I don't mean to go negative on, but when you talk about how the game is today, there's so much of that echoing around that it can sometimes, maybe if you have the wrong people in charge, get into their heads and cause them to take actions that shouldn't be taken. And Mikel, like George, was given the time, given the support from within, from the people that it mattered. In order to make it happen. And that's really what I'm getting at is the, you know, the echo chamber of negativity. You would not have necessarily had that in the mid 80s and late 80s.
No.
But so for Mikel to do that in this
environment. You might get a couple of thousand people on Avenue Road screaming, you know, sack the board and shouting up to the director's box.
Maybe you weren't going to open CFAX and see people calling for your head.
No. There was much less exposure to public opinion in the way that it is now, you know. Very damaging very quickly. In some cases, things can explode and go viral and become incredibly tough.
Yeah, well, we've seen
that. And actually, I think that it's really interesting that the whole Arsenal experience now feels so different to, you know, when you think about Arsenal in, Arsenal out, and you think about how fractured the fan base was and how unpleasant and sad it was as a fan to experience your love of the club through that fractured prism. It was tough, you know. I mean, you go to any of the games now, everyone's happy. You know, there is no discontent between one fan and his or her neighbor. I said, all right, okay, not a lot. I mean, I don't know.
I know where. Well, there is, but it's getting a lot less. It's getting a lot less.
Love, yeah. And it what you know.
The people I want to be surrounded by.
I literally saw people fight.
Yeah.
Each other.
The people I want to surround myself with are exactly what you're talking about. And the
so, you know, it's so different.
And the loud minority is getting minor and more minor of a minority. So what's not a minority, though, is our live chat right now. We've got 350 some odd folks in the live chat. I apologize for being a bit less interactive than I normally would be with a chat. Obviously, I'm not typically with my guest physically in the same room. So hope you don't blame me that I like to focus more on Amy than on the comments.
But come on, give the guys some credit
there. We've got Sophie and Jared putting up some of your great comments, though, and your questions.
Sorry, my eyes are so bad that I'm struggling to read.
It's okay. We'll put them up. They'll be in big print. But towards things. The end of the
thanks
podcast.
Thanks, everybody, for all the questions.
And yes, your questions will be answered. Tom is one of my best mates from Tampa. He's a big fan of yours. By the way, I want to mention this because I was just thinking about it. I have a friend called Jeff Werner, runs the Boston Gooners Supporters Club. And he made sure that I mentioned to you that he is a fellow member of the Anything But Sweet Caroline Club. And he's from Boston, where that song tends to have a connection. I'm a member of that as well. I didn't renew my membership.
It makes such a difference to my Arsenal experience that we're no longer exposed to that monster.
Did you ask Peter himself to make that?
I did have words with various people along the way. I banged that drum. So sorry to people who like it, but I'm absolutely thrilled that we don't have it anymore.
I think it's just between not liking it or not minding it. I don't think anyone actually likes
it. I think some people really love it. Really? Do you know who really loves it? Tony Adams.
Really?
But it was Tony Adams's mum's favorite song. Get it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason.
No, there's Jeff. So, yeah, by the way, if you are enjoying the show, as Tammy will tell you, as the chief like officer of Highbury Squad, please hit the thumbs up button. It helps the channel. If you're not subscribed to the Highbury Squad and the Gooners Pod, please go to both pages, subscribe, hit the bell so that you'll hear of and see reminders of when we're going to be going live with Sophie's content, with mine. And your questions are going to be, I see you guys are following the rules and starting them with a G. Those are getting saved, and we'll be asking those in about 10 minutes or so. Speaking of the mid to late 80s eras, and here we go.
Sorry. I've just noticed that one thing I can read, it's all in capitals. Goon
Gang AFC. It's just written. Anyone who doesn't like Sweet Caroline hates Tony Adams' mum, which is maybe just kind of like twisting the narrative slightly.
A little bit.
I do. I'd never say a word against Tony or his family.
I do have to point out that he's allowed to say that because he's responsible for a good bit of the intro video that we just saw at the beginning of this podcast.
You were very purposeful, I noticed.
You know?
Do you always walk with such purpose?
I don't think I've ever walked that fast in my life, actually. You've seen me walk.
I think we need to see a sped up version.
Yes, well, we could do that. You know? We could do that.
Some Benny Hill music.
That's usually the soundtrack of my life, just playing behind me. But we got to get to the late 80s because one of the many Arsenal things that we do have in common, along with Highbury and all that, is our absolute love and adoration for, this actually comes before what you're thinking of, one certain Arsenal footballer of that generation over all others. You've called him your footballing hero, which I actually love. I've always answered the question of who's your favorite Arsenal player of all time with his name. And frankly, you know, I probably have more favorite players, but no hero, no Arsenal man and footballer who's ever had the impact on me that this man has had. But tell us about your Arsenal hero and what he meant to you. Obviously, we're talking about Rocky Rocas.
Okay, I'm just checking.
You're just making
Now, Rocky was...
talking about Perry Grove.
A truly, truly special human being, and I think that's the point. And we're not just talking about someone who was a phenomenal footballer. He was a phenomenal person to be anywhere near. And he had something about him you take yourself back to being a kind of a young fan and you're looking at players on the pitch who you sort of identify with particularly. And he wanted it. He was so talented and he wanted it so much. He was so tough. There's bits of Saka and he that is connected.
That's also on the list, but yes.
It's not.
He's the first person I've ever seen compared.
There's a closeness. There's a connection between the two of them, sort of spiritually almost. You know, coming through the youth system, being a real role model as a person that. You can't, you know, in a similar way that there's not that many, I think, opposition fans that or don't like him. And that's unusual because generally when you play for a big club, for anybody, you know, there are going to be some people out there that are going to just have it in for you because you're an important player at a rival club. But I think that's one of our viewers. Quite unusual about Bukayo.
One of our viewers feels that way about Kevin Nolan all the time. You know who you are, Fergus, but sorry.
Okay. That's a distraction.
I apologize.
That's all right. But yeah, I think
Rocky shoehorned that in there for no reason.
Where opposition fans all kind of really warmed to him as well. There was something about him. He had a certain charisma, a certain aura.
And this is before the Euros as well, when obviously his profile and the potential for people to come up with an opinion, I felt like he was kind of not looked at as a bad guy before that either. Since then, even more empathetic of a figure.
I would say one thing though, and that's like just generally, I think nowadays there are fewer of those players that, you know, people really can't stand than it was maybe more commonplace, I think, in the kind of 90s, early 2000s, where there was maybe more personalities at clubs. So I don't know, like you look at Liverpool, you know, how many Liverpool players is an Arsenal fan? Or you know, do you really think I absolutely can't stand that guy? Yeah. I mean, obviously there are certain players like Bruno Fernandes at Man United who kind of generate that kind of
basically anyone named Bruno at this point, because they got one up in Newcastle that's pretty likable as well.
Keen on him. And when Mope came on the other day, there was somebody near us actually turned around and said, if Mope comes on, I'm actually leaving the ground. And I thought, no, you're not. And obviously they didn't, but I mean, that's how strongly they felt about it.
One of the good things that Guendouzi did in his time at Arsenal involves
generally speaking, I don't think there's that amount of villains, if you like, out there. I don't know why that is. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe people might completely disagree with that concept. But
I mean, it depends on who your groups are and who you're talking
with. I'd be really interested to know how many of the current Arsenal, as I think this is quite a likable team. Like, if you try and remove yourself from, like, Red and White spectacles.
Right. Which is hard to do.
But I can imagine that there are certain players. Yeah. It seems like
Ben White might be someone that we love. Our guy.
But like, obviously, Arteta is someone who I've got a lot of friends who support different clubs. And they're like, I can't stand Arteta. And I'm like, really? Like,
you like Klopp, but you don't like Arteta?
Like, well, but he does seem to provoke a little bit of
good
animosity in others. But I'd be curious to know your average fan, not even of a major club, but your average, I don't know, Southampton fan or Sunderland fan or QPR fan or whatever. Like, do they watch Arsenal and think, I can't stand him about some of our players? Mm, I don't know.
It's a good question, but no one would have said that about Rocky. You know, we've spoken to so many of his teammates who, I mean, they bring him up constantly as essentially the thing that made them feel comfortable at Arsenal Football Club.
Yeah.
Him and Janet. Just embracing them. I mean, Alan Smith talks about him lovingly. Just an incredible family. I am constantly thankful that I was able to watch him play football, and more thankful that I've gotten to know his family because they too, and we saw them together at the Barbican, which I was going to mention. Just what a wonderful family, a testament to their dad as well.
Yeah, beautiful people.
So Highbury. Not just the stadium, but the whole neighborhood. And it is a neighborhood. I mean, in the States, we're used to stadiums being on large campuses, kind of like the Etihad is, where, you know, where there isn't a house within a couple kilometers of the stadium because there's too many highways and entranceways and that sort of thing. But I mean, it's a wonderful neighborhood. Without giving too much away, you live quite close to the ground, right? I mean, I don't know when that took place or when you originally moved here.
Pretty much as soon as you get to an age where you can kind of choose where you live.
So I'm going to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that was sort of a place in the map to aim for. So our first place that we lived here was a house share with, I don't know, was there four or five of us there, mates? And we definitely had some pretty bad mold going on, and the house was falling apart a bit, but it was obvious it was a good place to be. And ever since we sort of stepped foot in the neighborhood as a resident, I've not really left. So and just go from little spot to spot, but always within very good walking distance.
Now, you've told me a story about the first time you came back here. Is that okay to talk about, or would you rather not?
Oh, well, at Highbury?
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, you know, just...
I was first, really
with
upset.
With the move to 2006, in 2006 in Emirates, I know you struggled with that. And you told me a story that I actually found really heartwarming and you know, has a happy ending. So, I've spoken to more than just you, a lot of people have said, I haven't been back. I don't want to go back. Mm. It's too painful.
Mm. I definitely felt like that to start with. And I did have to come back a certain couple of times for a work scenarios. And I felt incredibly despairing the first few times that I came back.
I mean, it'd be hard to explain to somebody who doesn't.
At the same time, I was always eternally thankful that it wasn't razed to the ground and rebuilt as supermarket or whatever, which has happened to many, many other stadia around the country where there is no recognizable sense of it still existing. So the fact that they were able to retain, obviously, the external, beautiful, spectacular external features. And if they...
Which we see behind
us.
Yeah,
and if anything had happened to them, I would have... I don't know, been devastated. And then, to create this environment which retains some of the kind of like, it's almost like if you nearly close your eyes properly when you're out there, you can still feel the ratio and the dynamics of the ground as it was.
I tell everyone that comes in here to visit that it's a beautiful courtyard. If you've ever been in here, there's glass water walls and
it is really nice.
I would have just preferred the pitch.
Well, obviously,
keep the pitch with the corner flags and all
that. You know.
No, I mean, I can't see why they couldn't do that, because that's what I want. I want the pitch.
Yeah, well, if it was down to me,
it would have been less expensive to make
it. Just been a bigger version of this, like.
Yeah, but you don't seem to mind the Emirates pitch that much.
Boy, where'd you get all these pictures from?
This was from the media day last year.
That was fun.
But you know, look, it is what it is. But I know. The first time you came back, you told me that it was kind of for a family-based event.
But I had to come back a couple of times and do a few things, and then there was the switching on of the Christmas lights one year, and I came along to that, and that was the moment where it felt okay again, because I could feel the sense of this sacred spot being kind of alive with a sense of community and people coming together. And that was really beautiful, actually. So since then, I felt okay.
Well, see, that's the story I remember, and it's fantastic. As tends to happen when you talk to somebody as fascinating and warm as Amy, I'm not going to get to half of the stuff we wanted to talk about. I mean, we haven't even talked about 1989, and we'll have to save that maybe for another episode somewhere down the line. But we, more than anything in this show, what we want to be able to
There's only so many times we can talk about a mic without people actually banging their heads against the wall.
I think that number of times.
We have to realize your insanity isn't always something to share. You know, it's we live with it in our own personal doubt minds.
In the neighborhood, we go to some local group sessions where we try to move past our 89 obsessions, but. But we do want to make sure to answer as many questions as we can. This show is not just about hearing great stories from great people, but also providing whatever access we can possibly provide to someone. Maybe you might not, if you're walking around in Chicago or Stoke-on-Trent or even London, you might not be able to just walk up and ask a question to. So we're going to go to that now. And let's see. One question is, are they at the old stadium? That's a quick one. Yes.
Yep, it's just behind us.
Yep.
We're in a flat that if we opened this glass door, we would see the pitch. This was the North Bank.
This is the North Bank, which was where, now your first game was in the North Bank, but then you switched over the clock?
No.
Or is it the other way around?
Very first game was in the seats.
Oh, okay.
In the west.
That makes sense.
But yeah, I was a North Banker for most of my kind of teenage years. And then when they put the seats in, it didn't like the vibe. So headed to the Clock End, which was where it was a little bit more boisterous. And that's my spiritual home.
Well, so then we can sing the song to each other. Oh, it's the Clock.
Well, I usually say that when I'm in the North Bank, and I get, you know, some people around me are embarrassed that I'm that old and weird, but it's fine.
Yeah, when I'm in the Clock End, which is most of the, I was in the North End, the North Bank for Brentford, but normally I'm in the Clock End, like Block 25, and when they sing that song, I'm usually singing with the other side, because I got to represent the North Bank. Question from Stephen Richards: 89 is an excellent film documenting a great moment in Arsenal history. Is it Amy's best memory as a Gooner? If not, what bests it?
That's it. Yeah, I mean, so lucky to have so many. But yes, that 89 moment is unsurpassed.
I don't see how there could be a better moment. I mean, you know, the Invincibles is a pretty amazing thing, but it didn't happen all at once, though. It happened.
But I would really, 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 really love, at the moment, the last few years, and it's something that happens, obviously, with the passage of time, where now I'm so desperate to win something reasonably big, not so much for me, but for the kids, for their generation that haven't had those moments of elation and euphoria.
Yeah, my boy started watching this club in 2006.
I'm so desperate.
Fall of 2006.
There's hundreds of thousands of people out there all over the world. There's people in America who are getting up at stupid times. There's people in, you know, Australia and the Far East and God knows what, but people that make pilgrimages to Emirates that care about the club as much as people who are right here where we are. And I want it for them. And so, I have to say, I'm in the Champions League. I know it still feels like a massive dream.
Can you imagine that Wembley?
It's the thing that...
I'm trying not to.
No, but, you know, I don't... I mean, in an old-fashioned way, I think I'd rather travel. Romantically, I think, to go...
Well, Paris would have been the place with Arsene Wenger.
Coming on.
All right, well, speaking of away in Europe, now, Dave from California, who, I had lunch with today, realized at lunch, he was the gentleman who snapped that picture of the, how do you feel playing at the Emirates from all the players today that I think is up to maybe 600,000 or 700,000 views now. And was talked about on a podcast.
I'd like to ask him a question, by the way. Go on, he'll do his question. I'm going to ask one back.
Okay. He asked, you have spoken in the past about traveling to European and Champions League away matches by yourself when you were a teenager. How did you manage that safely? And how did you get your parents to say, okay, bold?
Okay, well, I maybe wasn't always entirely truthful with my parents. So if you
with your parents, I thought you meant with those stories.
Rebel streak, and you just find a way to do the things that is your calling. But no, I you just met people along the way. It was absolutely a blast. In fact, some lifelong friends have come out of, you know, going on those trips, and you just, you know, you see.
Do you ever have anyone come up to you and just try to foist a Denver Gooner scarf on you? Just
the ones.
Just wouldn't give up on that.
But no, I wanted to go back to giant Cal Gooner because that picture, which is a brilliant picture, of all the players coming up with a word to describe how they feel about playing at Arsenal. I feel like I spent too long studying it, because I feel like that's one person's handwriting.
Ooh. Well,
I'm curious to know what other people think.
But
I'm not sure.
I don't know whether somebody was
like, what do you say? And then they wrote, okay.
It wouldn't have been that legend. I think it is one person's handwriting.
Yeah. That's the thing. It was like, the minutiae detail that really should
be. Are you doubting the sincerity
but that's obviously the great thing that we will never know is, what did Kai Havertz say originally before it got rubbed out? What was the first word that he felt he had to change?
I didn't even notice that. Oh, God. Yeah. It was probably yah. It starts things off with yah. But yes, thank you to Dave for enlightening the fan base with that.
That was great sport.
Question from Melvin Marks, dear friend of mine as well. Hi, Amy. When did your love of Arsenal and your occupation cross?
Oh, that's a really, really good question. I mean, many times in some respects, even still now. I think it's when I go to work, the discipline kicks in, and, you know, particularly if you're on a deadline, kind of prioritize that, but it doesn't stop me feeling and caring. And I say one of my favorite stories is when Carney scored that hat trick at Stamford Bridge, and I was working that day in the press box, and when the third goal went in, I proper celebrated. And you're not supposed to celebrate in the press box. It's a sort of, you know, code of conduct. It's an unwritten rule, but, you know, it's,
I forget what game it was, but our friend Tom Canton said that it was it the Villa game where we scored a last minute goal and there were some sort of between like one of the press people and the staff. I mean, everything was kicking off.
But I do remember,
like I said, I saw some people that were very happy about the goal at the end of the first half. You know,
but Steve Stammers, who was a great journalist, who did a lot of Arsenal and wrote Arsenal Wenger's program notes for a long time, who was at the Evening Standard. He was quite a sort of old fashioned guy. He always used to wear a suit and tie and look smart when he came to the game and stuff. And he was next to me that day at Stamford Bridge and gave me an elbow. He thought and went, "Put on the ball, Amy. Put on the ball."
By the way, I neglected to mention that the questions segment is brought to you by the wonderful people at Zenith Coins. Have you seen the Zenith Coins that are out there? These beautiful keepsakes. And what better time to pre-order a Zenith coin with 10% off? Look at the scroll at the bottom of the screen has the coupon code.
That was a very slick little.
Did you see how I transitioned?
You know, segue there, yeah.
Then but because their new Zenith coin is the North Bank version, and so every time we do a podcast, Zenith is going to come out with a new coin that is a tribute to the location. So my Florida pool will be having a Zenith coin soon when I return there and do a podcast from there. But check out the new coin; it's a thing of beauty. So go to Zenith Coins, HSNB10 for 10% off. We're going to do one more question if you have a minute, and then we're going to send you off to our next show on the Highbury Squad with James from Sky Sports. Sophie will be talking to him about Ben White. It's always going to be a good conversation. So question from Des. There are three statues of former Gunner greats outside the Emirates: Adams, Bergkamp, and Henri. Which player in the current Arteta squad does Amy think has the best chance of joining them, and why? And I'm going to add to this, which two players arm in arm should be the next?
Well, obviously, Dave Rocastle and Ian Wright.
Yeah, have been that needs to be next.
Kind of shouting about for a while, but I'd say Bakayo. And just a quick note that I was fortunate enough to be involved in the consultation for the new artwork around the Emirates. And there was quite a lot of heated debate about the panel, which has the kind of young players going in as kids and coming out as fully formed, sort of, you know, essentially the from Hail End to the future. But and I felt very strongly that Bukayo needed to be on it.
And you take a chance someone's career doesn't go the way you think.
But I think that they were just a bit nervous in terms of the timing. What if the situation changed and he ended up going someplace else, and you know, da da da. And I think that
think of all the players we might have put up there 10 years ago, 12 years ago, Van Persie and Fabregas.
I think that was that fear is what made it, you know, difficult for them to commit to it at that particular point when they were doing the artwork. But on my gut, I was like, just do it. You know, he deserves it, whatever. And thankfully, he's still here and he's deserving it more and more and more.
Yeah.
And I think he's so symbolic of this new Arsenal. And everyone loves him. So, yeah, Bukayo would probably be a great choice.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your questions, everybody. 700 now in the live chat. Hope you've enjoyed our time with Amy Lawrence. I know I certainly have. A couple pieces of housekeeping. We'll be starting our regular day and time. This is a Thursday evening, 8 p.m. show. But when you're doing a live in-person show, you do it when you have the opportunity. And so we'll be doing that a week from this Thursday, the 21st of March. Looks like at this point, not 100% sure, but looks like we should be welcoming in another universally beloved voice in the Arsenal community, keyword being voice. Someone whose dulcet tones soothe, educate, and enlighten so many in the Arsenal community. And I'll just leave it there. Quick note, if you're in the States or if you are planning on traveling over to the States, Goonerpalooza tickets are now on sale for Chicago the weekend of April 19th to 21st, where we very well may not have an Arsenal game to watch since Wolves just have to beat Coventry now to cancel our game for that weekend. But we're going to be doing a live podcast, which I'm very honored to say will be benefiting Gooners versus Cancer this year with Elliot from the Arsenal Vision, myself as kind of the host and mediator, and some other great names, Chicago John, Tim, a.k.a. Arse2Mouse, and a few others. So any last words or of wisdom or to impart to our Gooner family? Wisdom,
but just to say it's been a pleasure to chat as ever. And thanks to everyone who's listened in and written questions. And just don't get too carried away yet. Like, just slowly, like, give it another month and then let's see where we are. Let's just all try and keep our cool and hope for a real match to remember. Not just tomorrow night, but next league game, because that could make us have a real miracle on our hands. So,
well, let's keep our fingers crossed. Thanks to everybody watching this on Highbury Squad and the Gooners Podcast. And we look forward to seeing you again as we travel from Highbury to the Grove.